While I'm waiting for the slide to come up, I wasn't going to say anything about Common Grace's 16 days of activism, but I will now, because you've handed me a microphone, so watch out. So I work for an organisation called Common Grace. I'm sure many of you are familiar with it. I'm part of the Domestic and Family Violence Justice team, so I'm one of their spokespeople. So it's kind of a bit of my job today, but mostly it's just because I'm friends with Christine. So coming up is the International Day for the Elimination of Violence Against Women, and there's 16 days in between that date and International Human Rights Day. So we take those 16 days to basically have 16 days of activism, raising awareness about domestic and family violence, how we can prevent, intervene and respond. So if you're interested in signing up for those reflections across those 16 days of activism, let me know. I can help you out with that. But you're actually getting a bit of a taste of it today because I'll be writing one of those 16 reflections and it will largely come out of today's sermon. So there you go, taste test. So the first thing I normally do when I speak is acknowledge the traditional custodians of the land. So I want to pay my respects to the Gurungi people, but also to the Darug people on whose land I live and work. And so I pay my respects to their elders and their leaders, past, present and emerging. The next thing I want to do... Okay, so I had this joke prepared, right, where I was going to say that Mike had infected me with his inability to use technology. So I think I just need to... Yeah, there we go. Okay, we good? Hey! So... I didn't think I was going to need the joke, but, you know, I'm glad it was there. And I'm glad Mike's here, because otherwise, falling flat. So the other thing I want to say is trigger warning. So obviously we're going to be discussing domestic and family violence. It's not easy going. I will try to break it up with some comic relief. But if you need to take a break, feel free to do so. If you need to walk out, get some fresh air, look after yourself or concerns, call 1-800-RESPECT. So I'm just going to leave that number up there for a little while. So I also have to tell you that I am a little bit nervous. So it's not only that I'm in a church with some of the best speakers I've ever heard, so Christine, Mike, AP, others. It's not only that I'm attempting to renovate my house, and so all of my worldly possessions are currently on my balcony being rained on. Which I like to call sexy Bible times. And domestic and family violence. And I have to speak about this in front of my in-laws. Pray for me. But as I was thinking about that, I realised that that's actually kind of the point of everything I'm saying today, is that we have to be able to move past our discomfort in talking about things like sex and violence and consent, gender equality, and respectful relationships. We've got to be able to put that to one side and talk about it because that's how we prevent it. So before I get into the work of primary prevention, how about we actually pray? Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, this is a fraught topic. And so I pray that even though it is a difficult one, my words would be pleasing to you. Pray that you would be opening our hearts and minds. Pray that you would use my words. Pray that you would be speaking to people here today and that they would hear what it is you want them to hear, God. Amen. So, domestic violence in Australia is an epidemic, and it's gendered. Violence against women, or gender-based violence, and domestic and family violence are two sides of the one coin. I'm sure most of you have seen these kinds of statistics. 1 in 3 women against physical violence. 1 in 4 women have experienced workplace sexual harassment. Nearly 1 in 5 women have experienced sexual violence. Nearly 1 in 4 women have experienced physical violence by a current or former partner. 1 in 4 have experienced emotional abuse from an intimate partner. I recognise that's a lot to take in. I get that that can be really overwhelming, and I understand that it can be easier to just switch off. I understand that it's easier to think of that happening to someone else, somewhere else. So I thought, rather than rattling off these statistics, how about I make it a little bit personal? Intimate partner violence is the greatest health risk factor for women aged 25 to 44. That's me. That's a lot of you in this room. So there's this wonderful quote by Annabelle Crabb, who I love and want to be when I grow up. A woman gets killed by her male partner every single week. And somehow that doesn't qualify as a tools-down national crisis. Even though if a man got killed by a shark every week, we'd probably arrange to have the ocean drained. So normally I focus on that having the ocean drained part because it's funny and it's absurd. And sometimes I need that humour to cut through the really jarring fact that one woman a week is being murdered. But lately, I've been focusing on the tools-down national crisis part. And that's because, as I mentioned, I'm renovating my house. So with my family and my church family and some friends, I am attempting to repair my water-damaged and just generally disintegrating house. So for the first time in my life, I'm experiencing two things. The first is what it's like to actually put tools down. So renovating is hard work, but it's also really satisfying and rewarding work. And you can look around and you can see the progress that you've made. You can see the impact that you're having. And so in our daily lives, I recognize that work, study, family, day in, day out is hard, but it's really rewarding and really satisfying. And you can look around and see the progress you've made. And so it's easier to keep going about our lives than putting our tools down and doing something more important. So for me, I had to know when to put tools down and write this sermon. For us, we might need to know when it's tools down and do 16 days of activism, or march, or strike, or do something, anything, to address the tools-down national crisis that is domestic and family violence. The second thing I'm experiencing at the moment is this confluence of a whole bunch of health risk factors. So I'm sick, you might be able to hear it in my voice, because I'm just surrounded by mold every day. I am covered in cuts and bruises and splinters from doing the work of renovation. I'm also tired. I'm so tired. I know that a lot of you guys are tired today because there was a massive wedding yesterday, so we'll be tired together. But it also means that I'm really likely to seriously injure myself with a power tool. But what's more likely than all of those things, that I'll get sick from mold, or I'll hurt myself, or I'll maim myself with a drop saw? Seriously. So what is more likely than all of those things is that someone who claims to love me will hurt me. What is more likely than my getting cancer or being involved in a car accident is that someone I love will hurt me. That is the greatest health risk factor for women aged 22 to 44. That bracket. That's how we make it personal. So what on earth do we do about that? What do we do about this epidemic, this tools down national crisis? Well, hopefully we try to prevent it. So primary prevention is part of the continuum of prevention work that includes the way we respond when violence has happened, hopefully stopping it from happening again. It's part of when we intervene, when we see that someone is at risk. Primary prevention is about asking what we can do before violence occurs to stop it from even happening in the first place. What makes primary prevention so important is it's the only way we reduce violence against women over the long term. But what is primary prevention? Well, it's road safety campaigns to reduce speeding and fatigue fatalities. It's Happy Healthy Harold, who remembers that guy? Yeah, encouraging you about healthy life choices. It's safety guards on drop saws, so I don't hurt myself. We know that primary prevention works because we've seen it work before. So we know that it's successfully reduced other complex health and social problems like drink driving. Everyone seen the drink driving ads? Smoking. Everyone seen the warnings on packets? That's primary prevention. So how do we do that for domestic and family violence? The best social research we have, stuff used by Our Watch, Common Grace, even the Australian government, tells us that the biggest indicator and driver of gender-based violence and domestic and family violence is gender inequality. So that's adhering to strict gender norms and rigid gender hierarchies. So here there are four particular manifestations of gender inequality, and they set the necessary social context for higher rates of violence against women. They normalise the existence of violence against women so that we don't take it seriously, and we put the blame and deficit on the victim rather than the perpetrator. They reinforce a range of systems and behaviours that normalise the idea that women are somehow lesser and that what happens to us is somehow less important. They create expectations about certain roles for women and the dominance of men. So for us to prevent violence before it starts, we need to work to change these attitudes. We need to work on changing these gendered drivers. So what I'm going to have a look at today is if we are going to address men's control, one way we can do that is to talk about consent. If we're going to address stereotyped constructions of gender, how about we talk about gender equality? And if we're going to address disrespect, how about we talk about respectful relationships? That's primary prevention. So now, finally, we get to Song of Songs. So this is where I think looking to Song of Songs as God's given example, celebration even, of love, sex, sexuality, and relationship can help men and women understand love and sexuality as they were intended. So we're going to take a look at how Song of Songs, even from just those first few verses, just the first four verses, exemplify primary prevention strategies. So what that is how the woman and the man, the lover and the beloved, model consent, gender equality, and respectful relationship. So here we have a biblical example of primary prevention. Why are we not talking about this? Why are we not teaching this? So my first point, consent. So even though the song opens in medias res, which is just a nerdy Latin way of saying in the middle of the action, because puns, it does begin with what should be the first starting place of any sexual encounter, consent. So verse 1 says, "Let him kiss me with the kisses of his mouth." So what I mean by consent is to agree to do or allow something, to give permission for something to happen. So for a woman to give consent in an ancient Near Eastern context was revolutionary. It shouldn't still be radical today, but it is. One example. Earlier last year, the New South Wales Attorney General called for a review of sexual consent laws following the overturning of Luke Lazarus's rape conviction. It was overturned on this basis. It could be proved that Saxon Mullins did not consent. No consent equals rape. It could not be proved that Lazarus had understood that Mullins had not consented. That's one hell of a loophole. We have got to be able to talk about what is clear, informed, and enthusiastic consent. Recent social research shows that Australian parents don't know how to talk to their kids about consent. A primary prevention strategy for intimate partner violence, including coercion, harassment, abuse, and yes, even rape, is just to talk, especially with young people. Talk about clear and enthusiastic consent. It's imperative that we're talking about this in our churches. And what do you know? We have a biblical example from which to teach. The very opening verse of Song of Songs. In fact, the very first word that the lover speaks is giving consent. So I'm about to get a bit nerdy technical here, but please go with me. There's a pun at the end. I promise it's worth it. So the first word in Hebrew is a verb phrase translated as "let him kiss me." It's in a Hebrew mood called the jussive. The jussive exists for expressing wish, desire, and permission. So Tremper Longman, who's kind of the dude when it comes to Song of Songs, says that it's an invitation for intimacy expressed in the form of a wish. An invitation for intimacy expressed in the form of a wish. I would actually say that it's consent. So it's permission for intimacy expressed in the very grammatical mood that is for giving permission. There you go. Consent in the Bible, in Song of Songs. So the lover here is consenting and inviting her lover to consent. And she's really clear about the eroticism too. So I also want to be really clear. If you can't find a way to make consent sexy, you are quite literally doing it wrong. Equality. So I am going to take a bit of a guess here and assume that Christine has given you a really good introduction to Song of Songs, because you've already looked at Song of Songs 1, right? So I'm hoping she's given you a bit of background, a bit of setting, maybe some interpretive history. Yes, no? Okay, good, great. My work here is done. So what I will say is it should be pretty clear at this point that I don't think Song of Songs is an allegory for Jesus' relationship with the church. I think Song of Songs is a series of beautiful love poems between two lovers about sex. I think it's in the Bible because sex is God's good gift to us. But then that leads people to ask me, so what about Jesus? How does this point to Jesus? Well, Song of Songs, I think hopefully you'll realise by now, is really clever. So I think not only does it point forward, it points back as well. So in Song of Songs, you've got a man and a woman who are equal in a garden. Sound familiar? I think it's also pointing forward to a time when Jesus makes everything right again. So you've got a man and a woman who are equal in a garden. That's how I think it points to Jesus. But I also think it points to equality, and so I'm going to give you a few examples of how Song of Songs does that. So how I approach the song is a strong tradition which asserts that in the song there's no male dominance, no female subordination, and no stereotyping of either sex. So I want to give just a few examples. So in Australian culture and in church circles, we're often used to the expectation that the man makes the first move. Not in Song of Songs. We're also used to this expectation that the men do the wooing and the pursuing. Not in Song of Songs. There's also this idea that persists that men somehow want sex more than women. Not in Song of Songs. I think that's humanity and equality to be emulated. So the level of equality across our society, as well as within individual relationships, has a significant impact on reducing violence against women. The unequal distribution of power and the adherence to rigid or hierarchical gender roles reflects gendered patterns in the prevalence and perpetration of violence. But what's extraordinary about Song of Songs is precisely the absence of these systems and hierarchies. In the relationship between the man and the woman, there's no hierarchy, no superiority, no authority, no dominance, no submission. In the song, we have a female protagonist who is assertive and determined and equal. And this is in love poetry about the good gift of human sexuality. I want to see that in the next youth group sex talk. That's primary prevention. And that leads me to my third and final point. Respect. To begin to prevent violence against women, we need to understand the cycle of violence. Not all disrespect towards women ends in violence, but all violence against women starts in disrespectful behaviour. Developing respectful relationships will have long-term impacts on the level of violence against women. So if the church is to help stop intimate partner violence at the start, we have got to model respectful relationships. Understanding how the song models respect is just one way we can do this. So fair warning for you all, I'm about to get technical nerdy again. Please go with me, I've got another pun for you. Okay. The song uses a poetic device called enelage. It also does this with some figurative language and some metaphor, and it's really clever. It does this to emphasize both respect and desire. So this basically means that Hebrew does this cool thing where it shifts from addressing someone in the second person. So I'm talking to you and I say you. And as I'm still talking to you, I suddenly change to calling you my friend or my person or my favorite. When Hebrew does that is to signify respect. So one example is in verse 4. The lover figuratively calls the beloved the king. She's giving him a metaphorical role that expresses both her respect and her desire for him. He, in turn, frequently refers to her with his favorite pet name, my love. He does this to simultaneously express his respect and desire for her. Here the song shows us that passionate desire and considerate respect go hand in hand. So in the double entendre of the late, great Aretha Franklin, respect, give it to me when you get home. So pulling it all together, how do we address this tools-down national crisis? How can the church do primary prevention? Well, there are so many ways, all of these ways. But I want to say, how about we talk about consent? How about we make sure women, especially girls, are informed and have the confidence to make their own decisions? Use Song of Songs if you like. Talk about equality. And not just the women can use power tools too stuff. Talk about the awkward, sexy Bible time stuff. What would it look like for women to initiate and pursue relationships? What would it look like if we had a healthy understanding of female desire and sexuality? Use Song of Songs if you like. Talk about respectful relationships. Model respectful relationships. Explain that desire and respect go hand in hand. Use Song of Songs if you like. So I recognise that that was a lot, and it was heavy going, and it was technical punny going. So how about I pray to finish? God, thank you that we are made in your image. Thank you that you have made us male and female. Thank you that you have made us to be in relationship with you and relationship with each other. I pray that you would help us to do those relationships better. Pray that you would help us to be respectful. Pray that you would help us to have relationships of equality. Thank you that you love us so that we may love you and love others and hopefully love them well. Amen.